Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
The Volume.
Looking for a super offer for Super Bowl 58? DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. New customers can bet on the big game and turn $5 into $200 instantly in bonus bets. Now me, I'm big on quarterback bets. So Patrick Mahomes, I'm all in on a whole bunch of different bets with him. Brock Purdy, I'm all in on a whole bunch of different bets with him. And if there's any Taylor Swift bets that are available, I'm all in on them as well. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code MANIX. New customers can bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 58 with code MANIX. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, jumping on the podcast a little bit early this week because I want to talk about the 168-pound division. Because while when we look at the best divisions in boxing, we often discuss welterweight. We discuss now junior welterweight because there are some really big names in those weight classes. After watching the events of this past week, I think you can make an argument that the super middleweight division is the deepest one in boxing, certainly among the deepest ones in all of boxing, with some really intriguing matchups that could be made to determine who is the king of that division. To talk about that, I want to bring in the guy that is the king of talking about all divisions, from 105 to 222 plus, or whatever it is above Bridgerweight, Corey Erdman, senior writer, BoxingScene.com, broadcaster, ESPN, and DAZN. He actually called a super middleweight fight headlined by Eric Bazinian. And I know Corey is deeply familiar with his Canadian brother, Christian Mabili, who is suddenly a player in the 168-pound division. So, Corey, I figured this conversation would be right in your wheelhouse.
Roughly. I mean, my wheelhouse is really 105 or Bridgerweight, but I can settle in around 168 as well.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah. I'm telling you, it was an opportunity missed for us at DAZN this week, and not having you as a special contributor to Oscar Collazo's 105-pound title defense. You would have had a lot of interesting knockout CP Freshmart potential matchup notes for that fight. So
yeah, I don't know how many potential matchups there are for Knockout CP Freshmart, unless you're willing to go to Thailand. And even if you do, the fight still might not happen. You know, sorry to Eric Rosa for bringing up old wounds. But going back to what you're saying, Chris, I mean, like, if you extend that time period to about 14 days or so, you include Christian and Billy and Eric Bazinian and Jaime Munguia. I mean, this is an exciting 2 weeks for 168 pounds, and it reinforces this as being one of the most interesting divisions in the sport. And if you look at just sheer young talent, Chris, if we're using the Ring Magazine rankings, there are 8 young undefeated super middleweights in those rankings. The only mm-hmm. people with losses on their records in those rankings are Caleb Plant, John Ryder, who might come out after that loss, I don't know. And then, of course, Canelo Alvarez. So the in terms of fantasy booking, fantasy matchups, and looking for new young stars, this might be the exact place to look.
Yeah, the depth is incredible. You can throw Vladimir Shishkin into that mix as someone that belongs inside that top 10, maybe someone that people, casual fans, are not all that familiar with, but a guy certainly with some talent. Let's start with Jaime Munguia, who, look, is a polarizing figure in boxing because he's got a glossy record, now 43-0, after his win over John Ryder. But the criticism is he has not faced top competition up until this point. I think you could argue that John Ryder was, if not the best opponent Jaime Munguia has faced, certainly within that top two or three. Ryder, an accomplished guy, you know, probably deserved to win a super middleweight title a few years ago when he fought Callum Smith, had a phenomenal 2022 when he beat Daniel Jacobs, he beat Zach Parker. And then he goes out, fights Canelo, and look, didn't win many of those rounds, but went the distance with Canelo Alvarez in Mexico last year. He comes into that fight against Jaime Munguia. He just gets blitzed. Like, right, you know, John Ryder had a couple of moments, but got knocked down 4 times, and eventually Tony Sims in his corner just decided to throw in the towel. I was really impressed with what I saw from Jaime Munguia. I saw a fighter that looked really comfortable in this weight class. I saw a fighter whose skills are continuing to show improvement. I saw a guy that, if you can't match his punch output, you're going to have a hard time beating him. So what did you see when you watched the Munguia Ryder fight?
I saw probably the best win and the best performance of Jaime Munguia's career overall, probably. I mean, at least dating back to, you know, his introduction to the landscape on HBO back in 2017, 2018. I saw a fighter with improved timing. I saw a fighter who was able to make some interesting technical adjustments as well. I saw him bending down, fighting out of a little more of a crouch to get down to John Ryder's level, and that served him well. It also gave him a little more upper body mobility, which I think really helped him in this fight as well. And it's interesting, going back retroactively on the DAZN broadcast, there was a shot of Munguia walking in and he ran into Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. And of course, they weren't mic'd up at that point. But watching what they seemed to be talking about, and especially having watched the fight, you see Munguia and Chavez talking about kind of bobbing and weaving a little bit. And you see Chavez telling him, yeah, throw the right hand a lot, throw the right hand a lot. That's exactly what he went in there and did, which is really interesting. He had a very precise game plan with Freddie Roach and some new wrinkles to his game. And listen, the flaws with Munguia are always going to be there. And Freddie Roach even admitted as much in the post-fight press conference. He stopped himself short of saying, you know, he said that Munguia's defense improved since the Derevyanchenko. And at first he said, he's got good defense. And they said, well, he doesn't really have good defense. He has good offense, and that translates to good defense. And that's just the reality with Munguia, that even with those improvements, there were still those moments where he was going wild, going for the finish, and he gets touched in those moments. But that's also what makes him incredibly exciting. So I think we saw some very significant changes and improvements in his game, but also, you know, the things that make him a little bit vulnerable and the things that make him an entertaining TV fighter.
Yeah, I do think he came into this fight with a better game plan than he's had in some previous fights. I thought he was more controlled, which was a point he made during our fighter meetings, was I can't go out there and just let my hands go for 12 rounds. That's not a recipe for success, both short and long term. He does, to your point, and Sergio Mora made this point on the broadcast as well, like when he sees a guy hurt, like all strategy goes out the window. He just becomes a whirling dervish of offense, and that can lead to getting counter hit shot. And that's probably going to be something he's going to have to continue to fine tune as his strength of his opponents picks up. But I thought that was an excellent performance by Jaime Munguia. I mean, to knock Ryder down four times, to finish Ryder off in the ninth round. Look, John Ryder's a durable guy. He's been stopped once before, but that was a controversial stoppage. Went 12 with Callum Smith, went 12 with Canelo Alvarez. As I said, beat a guy like Daniel Jacobs. If you can do that to a John Ryder, that tells me you are graduating to a different level. So I thought that fight, you know, stamped Jaime Munguia as, and we can talk about the rankings, but top five, top six guy in the 168-pound division, which, as we've talked about, is a deep division. A couple of days before Jaime Munguia fought, Eric Bazinian was in action. Now, Eric Bazinian is not someone the casual fan is probably familiar with, but he is undefeated. He is starting to rack up some, you know, B-minus, B-level wins, I think you could probably call it. And he is someone that is starting to make a name for himself. So you called that fight on Thursday, headlined by Eric Bazinian. Where do you place him? Like, where does he fit into that super middleweight landscape?
So I think that reasonably you can rank Bazinian, you know, somewhere in the bottom half of the 168-pound rankings, you know, if we're ranking the top guys at 168. But he holds a top three ranking in, I think, all of the sanctioning bodies, definitely a top five ranking in all four sanctioning bodies. So he's kind of knocking on the door of those title shots. Now, is Canelo going to pick Eric Bazinian as an opponent? Likely not. But at the same time, I mean, there is enough hope looking at Canelo's track record over the years that sometimes he picks weird opponents. You know, Canelo fought Josecito Lopez. He fought Rocky Fielding. He fought John Ryder. So if you're a guy like Eric Bazinian, in your mind, you think that there is a potential path to that. I think more likely it's Bazinian against one of those other young, yet to be fully tested names at 168 pounds. And Bazinian is a guy who I think fans, those who are aware of him, had some questions about him probably over the last 2 years or so. He had a couple of shaky performances, one in particular against Jose Macias, where he was hurt badly by a journeyman who fought basically two weight classes below him. And so there was good reason to have some doubts about Bazinian. Now, there's been a lot going on in Bazinian's personal life, the passing of his father for a long time, the inability to go back to his native Armenia, because when he left Armenia to come to Canada, he had to issue his mandatory military service. So there's been a lot going on behind the scenes, but he really corrected the course with a knockout win over Ronald Ellis, and then a nice little stay busy win against Billy Godoy this past Thursday on ESPN+. Listen, he's not a splashy name, but he has a following in Montreal, and we saw with Christian and Billy, who I'm sure we'll talk about as well, what that marketplace can bring to the table as far as events. There's the possibility that Bazinian could get a home game against one of these other names at 168. And he's deserving of that. I think that he's probably, again, in the lower reaches of that weight class. You might not pick him against some of those other names, but he is a worthy part of a young, entertaining group in this weight class.
Yeah, he's a talented guy. And, you know, with that undefeated record, with that following in Canada, he's gonna get an opportunity. Somebody's gonna tap him for one of these bigger fights. I would really love to see Eric Bazinian in with Diego Pacheco. I think that is a really strong fight for both of those guys. Bazinian, more of the boxer in that matchup. Pacheco becoming a big time hitter. I mean, he has got some power, head, body all over the place. I would love to see that matchup sometime in the summer. Pacheco's going to come back on April 6th on a Matchroom card. Bazinian, as you said, just fought. That's a great matchup, and one where, you know, Bazinian, I have no idea how much money he's making for some of these fights. I would imagine it would be a bigger payday for him to fight a Diego Pacheco in the U.S. Christian Mbili, I think a lot of people probably got a if not a first look, a closer look at Christian Mbili just a couple of weeks ago when he fought in the co-main event of the Artur Beterbiev Callum Smith fight. Mbili fought Rohan Murdoch. Shout out to Rohan Murdoch for hanging in there for as long as he did, because he took a beating over six rounds. But, you know, I think we saw the good and the potential bad, maybe, of Christian Mbili. The good is that he is a dynamic offensive fighter. Like, he just throws small angles. He's got power. I mean, he can do some damage out there. Maybe the vulnerability is he does get hit a little bit. I mean, I know he's got a great amateur background, but, you know, if it was a higher level fighter than Rohan Murdoch, I think Mbili might have, you know, run into some problems in that last fight. So you've obviously watched a lot of Christian Mbili over the years. Where do you place him in this super middleweight mix?
I think he's a top five, 168 pounder. And again, when we're talking
about ranking, just before you continue, I think he's top three. And I had some people pushing back on me when I released or put up the social super middleweight rankings on DAZN this past weekend. Obviously, Canelo is number one. We're going to get to him. David Benavidez is number two. I think Mbili is number three. And people were like, well, what about David Morrell? Well, David Morrell's got like, what, 9-10 fights on his resume. Christian Mbili has been around longer and deserves to be ranked higher than David Morrell, regardless of what secondary title David Morrell's got around his waist.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. And I think that he, you know, just based on longevity and the number of wins that he's had over that caliber of opposition is probably superior to David Morrell. And again, when we're making rankings, what I was about to say before, you know, knowing that you were going to bring that up, is that we're making rankings. That doesn't mean necessarily that you would pick Mbili over David Morrell. It's just looking at their resume. You know, making rankings is a combination of a lot of different things. But, you know, yeah, what we saw with Mbili against Rohan Murdoch, listen, that wasn't an outlier. That is how Christian Mbili fights every single time out. You're right. I've seen a lot of Christian Mbili in my lifetime. I've called a lot of Christian Mbili. That is just how he fights. And we've seen him in serious trouble before against Carlos Gongora in a fantastic fight, a fight that probably had about two rounds that could have been round of the year contenders. He's been hurt badly before, and he's worked his way through that and continued to keep up the same punch volume. I had Lou DiBella tell me that he's never seen a fighter with a motor like Christian Mbili. And listen, when you watch Mbili fight, he's throwing heat nonstop. This isn't just a pure volume puncher. This is punching with power, with volume at the same time. He's basically the perfect television fighter. But he's also extremely well-schooled, and he is in a tremendous gym in Montreal with his coach, Mark Ramsey, training with Artur Beterbiev, training with Eric Bazinian, and a whole host of top-level amateurs that are just flooding that gym right now. He's in the perfect environment and getting the right kind of buzz. That was a great introduction to the wider landscape. You get that kind of fight, that kind of finish, and then Tim Bradley giving him a standing ovation. Like, you get these viral clips that are building momentum for him, and I think that everyone should be clamoring to see more of that guy on television.
Yeah, he is a television-friendly fighter, no question about that. So one of the things I love about this stretch is that it's almost like a game of can you top this, right, with these super middleweights. You had Mbili, impressive performance against Murdoch. Bazinian, stay busy fight, but dominates. You know, Munguia, dominant performance against the toughest opponent of his career. And in a couple weeks' time, or a few weeks' time, we're going to see Edgar Berlanga back in the ring. And I don't know if there's any more polarizing guy in the super middleweight division than Edgar Berlanga, who had that long winning streak of first-round knockouts. He's now on a longer streak of decisions. Or not longer, I guess, but a long streak for him of decisions. He's going to fight Patrick McGrory on February 24th. Now, before people criticize that fight, I'm actually fine with it. I mean, Patrick McGrory is not, again, household name, but I think he's ranked top five by one of the sanctioning bodies, and he's undefeated, and he is another television-friendly fighter. I think he's going to come forward and make it a fight against Edgar Berlanga. So I'm fine with the matchup in and of itself. But to me, this is Edgar Berlanga's opportunity to kind of keep up with the Joneses here, to show that he is still one of the top guys in the super middleweight division, and to perhaps, you know, make the case that he should be in the mix for that Canelo Alvarez fight later this year. So, you know, we've talked about the other guys at super middleweight, but where do you see Berlanga kind of fitting in?
Yeah, I think that he brings more to the table than seemingly almost anyone in that mix in terms of marketing power, in terms of like the attendance that he can draw. He's going to draw a lot of eyes in the United States, in Puerto Rico. Like, he brings a lot in that respect to the table, but I think he's less accomplished than most of the names that we're talking about as well. And that's okay. You know, that's, I think that the difficulty that guys like Berlanga run into is that they have to start saying the big names early on to get people interested, but that's probably beyond where they actually are in their development. And Jaime Munguia is a little bit of a different case, but it's somewhat similar in that when you start mentioning these big names early, you set the ceiling really high for who the fan base can, the types of fighters they can ask for in terms of your opponents. But the reality is that for someone like Edgar Berlanga, you know, Patrick McCrory is probably that, like, that's the type of level that he should be on right now if we want to find out where he's at and if we want to actually develop him as a fighter. So you're kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth as a fighter and as someone developing these guys, but that's just kind of the game that we're in. And, you know, like, going back to Munguia, and I think it relates to Berlanga in this sense too, I do have some sympathy for Munguia in terms of the criticism that he's received over the years, because I kind of liken him to, you know, and I like to use kind of analogies with the music industry, but with Munguia, he burst onto the scene, and the first time that anyone saw him basically was on HBO winning a world title out of nowhere on 3 weeks' notice. And it's the same thing is when, you know, a musician bursts onto the scene and just has a number one single, gets a whole bunch of popularity, and then you're like, oh shit, I have to go on a tour, I have to learn how to be a live performer, I have to release an album. And so Munguia kind of bursts out of the scene and just with this youthful exuberance wins a world title, calls out Canelo, and then you have these 7 years where, yeah, a Canelo fight doesn't materialize, but he's also still trying to learn and grow as a fighter. And seemingly with Munguia, plan A, B, C, and D has always just been to get a Canelo fight, and everything else has been secondary. I mean, he even wrote an article for ESPN titled My Journey to Defeating Canelo in 2018. He has been, it's been a single track, singular focus on Canelo, and nothing outside of that has mattered. So, and to tie this all together, like, I have some sympathy for these guys who have to try and build buzz. They have to say things that are going to get headlines to get attention, but it's probably a little bit beyond where they actually are in their development. So I could feel for Berlanga in a sense too.
You have a little more sympathy than I do, because, you know, look, when Berlanga was with Top Rank, one of the constant battles that they had towards the end was getting him to agree to fight a top opponent. Remember, it was Jesse Hart, you know, about a year or so ago. Like, will he fight Jesse Hart? And according to Top Rank, he wasn't willing to do it. Berlanga's camp has a different version of that story, but it led to a split with Top Rank because he wasn't willing to fight, you know, B or B-plus level guys. Now here we are in the second fight of his three-fight deal with Matchroom, and it has been kind of the same struggle. I mean, you know, Jason Quigley was a blown-up middleweight in his fight. And now McGrory, again, while I have no problem with the McGrory fight, he is not the kind of name opponent that I'm sure Eddie Hearn, Matchroom want him to face. If Berlanga comes out of this fight unscathed, his next fight has to be a big fight. You know, been a lot of talk about a Munguia fight. I think a Mbili fight could be on the table for Berlanga. I think his team is more open to that now than they were in months past. And of course, Canelo is still out there as a potential option because we don't know what Canelo is going to do. So, I mean, and let's kind of use that to transition, because Canelo, it's fairly obvious Canelo is not going to fight Benavidez in May. Whatever his reasons are, he is not going to do it. David Benavidez, his team have basically accepted that he's not going to do it. So, we know he's going to fight in May. We know he's going to defend his super middleweight titles in May, which, you know, leaves a limited list of potential opponents. It probably is a list that is headlined by Jaime Munguia, includes Edgar Berlanga, includes, for some reason, Jermall Charlo. You know, what is, if you were Team Canelo and you were looking to make the best fight possible not named David Benavidez, who would be atop your list?
I think the best fight possible, if those are the three options, is Jaime Munguia. I think that it's the most intriguing fight for me, and I'm giving grace to Jermall Charlo, who of course is, you know, he was battling a lot, and I don't know that this version of him, you know, without a couple of bounce back fights, presents
and
the best
one
version
fight
of himself.
At super middleweight that wasn't all that impressive against the blown up welterweight.
Against a non super middleweight, exactly.
That doesn't give anybody reason to believe that that Jermall is even capable of winning that fight.
No, so I think the best fight of those three is Jaime Munguia. If you're Canelo, if you're like, okay, what presents a good marketing opportunity, but maybe the easiest night for me? And this is not me saying this. This is what Canelo is probably thinking. Then it's probably Edgar Berlanga. You do the Mexico versus Puerto Rico. You get a big event. You're Canelo. It makes a ton of money. It's all gravy. Listen, I think that what happens now is that, knowing that there is a logjam with the biggest star in the sport holding all the titles at 168, ideally what happens is that we get kind of an informal round robin with these eight names that we're talking about fighting one another to find out who actually does deserve this fight. Because otherwise, you could be waiting around for a very long time. Because if Canelo fights twice a year, you know, let's say all eight of these guys remain undefeated. I mean, that could be a 4-year stretch that you're waiting for this fight on top of however long you've waited already calling out Canelo. Ideally, that's what happens. But yeah, for Canelo, if he has to pick of those three names, the best fight is Munguia, but I could see why he would pick Berlanga as well.
I think the best fight's Munguia, and I don't think it's even close. Now, maybe Berlanga changes that perception in February by going out and just blowing past Patrick McGrory. And I know there are people in his team that are probably telling him that, saying like, you got to go out, and if you win a 12 round decision, that does nothing for us. You've got to go out and win this fight in 3 or 4 rounds. People got to be talking about this fight as a fight of the year, as a knockout of the year. That's what puts you in the mix. But without, you know, that information, I think you've got to go directly to Munguia. I don't think Munguia's stock has ever been higher. Right. I mean, he's starting to fight some of those B minus level guys. He just blew through the guy you went the distance with, which again is not a reflection on Canelo. I think Canelo took something out of John Ryder in that fight, you know, just the punishment he inflicted against Ryder. I think that, you know, made him, you know, a lesser fighter going into the Munguia fight. But, you know, Munguia, in addition to being a really, really fun fighter, television friendly fighter, he's also a draw. And I know Berlanga is a draw too in New York City, but you know, I was there in Phoenix this past weekend. There were 10,000 plus strong. And these were all Jaime Munguia fans. Like, these were, I think, for the most part, paying customers to go see Jaime Munguia. So if you want to do a big fight in Vegas, or if you even want to go back to Texas, where Canelo once put 70,000 people inside AT&T Stadium, the guy to fight is Jaime Munguia. Now, some of it's going to come down to whether or not Canelo wants to do business with Oscar De La Hoya. That's just a fact, right? Like, Oscar promotes or co-promotes Canelo. He's going to be involved in that fight. We all know about the bad blood between those two. But if Canelo is looking at his career and looking at what is the best bang for my buck, where can I make the most money, be in the most entertaining fight, and be a favorite in that fight? Look, Munguia, we put threw flowers at him for the last 20 minutes or so, but going to a Canelo fight, he would be an underdog. Because it's one thing to walk into counter shots from John Ryder. It's quite the other to walk into a counter shot from Canelo Alvarez. This has always been my argument about Benavidez, who I think is a great fighter too. But you don't know what you are until you get hit by a shot you don't even see coming from one of the biggest punchers in and around these weight classes. So I would make Canelo a big favorite in that fight. I just think it makes too much sense. If they can put personal animus aside with Canelo and Oscar De La Hoya, and look, network promotional animus. I mean, right now, Canelo is still tied to PBC. This is going to be the second fight of his PBC deal. I don't know where that stands, quite frankly, because when Canelo signed that deal, PBC had a deal with Showtime. Now it's with Amazon. Is the guaranteed money still there for Canelo Alvarez? That I don't know. But if it turns out it needs to be a PBC Golden Boy co-promotion, a Amazon DAZN co-broadcast, that makes it difficult in and of itself. But To me, it's pretty clear that this is the guy. If Benavidez is not the guy, Jaime Munguia is the guy.
Yeah, and it's I think that sometimes people underestimate how much of a draw Munguia is, because you're right. I mean, that place was electric in Phoenix. Yeah. During the Durivinchenko fight, I mean, I remember having to turn my headphones up so that we could hear each other and whatnot. It is like he has a fan base, and he is drawn in Arizona. He's drawn in Phoenix. He's drawn in Texas. He's drawn in Mexico. His
LA.
Fans will
he's
move
drawn,
around.
In the Honda Center in L.A.
In the Honda, he's drawn in L.A. There. And I think that his fans are specific to him, too, because I recall there being moments at those fights, you know, where the name Canelo was mentioned. His fans are excited about him facing Canelo. Obviously, Canelo has more fans, but he'll bring a fan base to that fight as well. Listen, it would be an electric atmosphere if they can make that happen. And the hope is that, you know, the network complications will certainly be a big hurdle if indeed, you know, Canelo is beholden to Amazon as well. The hope is that the understandable animus that is there between Canelo and Golden Boy, and I'm sure, you know, Canelo, there's the main part of his brain is saying, I don't want to help make money for Oscar De La Hoya right now. If he could flip that and say, I want to knock off one of his three biggest stars, and if he could turn that animus into motivation, then perhaps we get a fight. And that's really the switch that has to flip for Canelo to get this done.
Yeah. And look, he could look at it and say, I need help marketing, you know, this fight. My, you know, disdain for Oscar could help do that. You know, a press tour where it's Oscar on one side, me on the other, you know, it's going to get spicy at some point. Oscar will give an interview, say Canelo's, yeah, he's top 10 Mexican fighter all time or something to that effect. So it could definitely be interesting there. Before I let you go, we have to address the guy that I think is the future of super middleweight, which is Diego Pacheco. This kid's legit. Everyone I talk to that has nothing to do with Diego Pacheco, and this is why I always say I'm always high on this guy, because there are people in boxing that have zero to do with them, no investment whatsoever, that constantly tell me this guy's the real deal. Like, this guy is a terror. He returns on April 6th. He continues to climb the rank. He's top five, I think, in three out of four, all four. I mean, he's right up there in the super middleweight rankings. I'll put it this way, Corey. If I was buying stock in one of these super middleweights over the next 5 years, it would probably be Diego Pacheco, because I think he's really, really, really good now. And I think in the next 6 to 12 months, we could be talking about him as great, as being a guy that, you know, at some point could be on the pound for pound list. That's how high I am on Diego Pacheco. How do you see him?
I'm right there with you. I think that especially in 2023, I don't think there was a fighter who took a more obvious step from prospect to contender than Diego Pacheco in that year. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, you know, I was probably along with a lot of people thinking, okay, he needs a few more development fights. He's a young kid. He's growing into his body. Let's give it some time. By the end of the year, I'm fantasy booking him against all these other 168 pounders. I think that he is... he's putting everything together. It's not just his natural power. It's how he sets it up. He has different tools. He has different ways that he can win a fight. And he has a nastiness, a mean streak in the ring now that I didn't necessarily see out of him when he was younger. I think that with that maturity has come a confidence that is aiding him as a pure puncher. It's the kind of mentality that I think you need if you want to be the big bomber that he seems to be and wants to be as a fighter. If I'm buying stock, I'm buying stock in him. And in terms of just pure excitement, again, like going back to all these exciting names at 168, really, it's Pacheco and Mbili for me in terms of just raw, pure television excitement. It's those two names at the top of the list for me.
I would love to see footage, if it exists, of Diego Pacheco and David Benavidez sparring.
Yeah.
They're both up there in the Seattle area, trained by Jose Benavidez Sr. Those must be good sparring sessions. And I'm guessing they do it a lot because, you know, is there a better sparring partner than, you know, one of the top guys in your weight class? Pacheco just had a Munguia-esque win in his last fight. You know, Marcelo Caceres, never been a world champion, but went the distance with Berlanga, tough guy, fought at a pretty high level. And Munguia did a job on him. Like, you know, effectively, Cosera said no mas at the end of that fight because he was taking, you know, such a beating. I agree with you. I mean, he made a jump in 2023. He was still my prospect of the year because, hell, he's 22 years old or whatever he is. He's
sure,
still
yeah.
technically a prospect, but he's top five in all these rankings, and I think he's going to be a big-time problem. He's the guy, when you talk about putting guys in with bigger name fighters, he's the guy I want to see, whether it's Mbili, if they can make that fight happen, which they, you know, they could. Like, they're not, these politics are not blocking a Pacheco-Mbili fight from happening. Same thing with Eric Bazinian. Like, those are the guys, if I'm Eddie Hearn, I'm targeting for the summer of 2024. I want him in with another undefeated top 10 opponent that would give him kind of the bona fides to call out a Canelo or a Benavidez or somebody, not Benavidez, obviously they're not going to do that. But in 2025, to be able to call out one of those big names at the 160, 168, maybe 175-pound division. He needs that guy on his resume. And I think Matchroom's going to do everything he can to ultimately make it happen. All right, Corey, good stuff, man. Appreciate your time. And with our apologies to Vladimir Shishkin, we will address your talents on the follow-up episode of the Super Middleweight Podcast later in the year. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Corey Erdman for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I will see you later on this week.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait.
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Tired of restless nights? At Lisa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Lisa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.